U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
President Trump wants Congress to add more money to its COVID-19 relief bill, and the president issues a series of pardons, including to former campaign advisor George Papadopoulos. Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal. We're joined today by my colleagues, Kim Strassel. Hi, Kim.
Hi, Kyle.
And Bill McGurn. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Kyle.
A day after Congress passed a $2.3 trillion and 5,600-page spending bill, including about $900 billion of COVID relief provisions, this is what we talked about yesterday, President Trump slammed that package as a disgrace and asked for Congress to go back to the drawing board. In a video posted to Twitter on Tuesday night, the president's biggest ask involve the $600 checks that the bill would send to many Americans below a certain income threshold, an income cap. And here's what Trump said, quote, "I'm asking Congress to amend this bill and increase the ridiculously low $600 to $2,000 or $4,000 for a couple," unquote. Kim, what do you suppose the thinking there is? And is that kind of increased stimulus needed?
I'm not really sure what the thinking is. I mean, I suppose that this comes down to the president wanting to be the person who, you know, he's wanted to send checks to households all along. And there was some pushback among Republicans, even among some Democrats, a few. And then it finally got put into this bill, and he now seems to have taken great issue with the amounts. I cannot justify those amounts at all. We were critical yesterday, even of the amounts that were in there, because it's unclear that this would count as stimulus. There is some evidence from numbers out this week that consumer spending is dropping a little bit, but would, you know, that check really be in any way a substitute for far better moves that would get the economy going again, including not proceeding as many states are with some of these very severe lockdowns? So it's also a very indiscriminate way of giving money. There's a lot of people, you know, I've heard from a number of people who would be due these checks, and they don't understand the point of it, because they say they don't need it, and this is just piling up debt for future generations. This seems to be, I mean, whether or not he actually will veto it, that is a bigger question, but that seems to be the thinking.
Yeah, I mean, the cost of those additional checks, some napkin math suggests it would be, I mean, hundreds of billions of additional dollars in the bill. And, you know, he's, just to give a sense of how the reaction to the idea, I mean, it was Democrats who, you know, raced quickly to embrace it. So Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, tweeted, "Democrats are ready to bring this to the floor this week by unanimous consent. Let's do it." Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez says, "Rashida Tlaib and I already co-wrote the COVID amendment for $2,000 checks. It's ready to go. Glad to see the president is willing to support our legislation." Chuck Schumer says, "I'm in. What do you say, Mitch?" But Bill, somehow I mean, I'm skeptical that Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is going to warm to this idea.
Right. I think, as Kim said, there are quite a few people in his caucus that I believe are rightly opposed to this. I mean, this was an odd morning to wake up to, because I have a lot of questions and issues with the relief bill. But one of mine is the $600. I mean, I'm not sure what good that does. I agree with Rand Paul that people are treating this like free money, but at some point it has to be paid back in some ways. So he did say, I believe Kim is alluding to this, I think he did say in the summer, he threw out the $2,000 figure, like when he was being criticized for breaking off the talks on this. He said, "Oh, I want more," and I think it was even more than $2,000. I think it's a bad idea. There are a lot of bad ideas in this bill, but this, I think, would make it even worse.
Trump, in his video, also called out some specific spending items. He asked for Congress to cut fat off the bill. And here's a few of the things that he mentioned. He said $85.5 million for assistance to Cambodia, $40 million for the Kennedy Center, which is not even open for business, $25 million to combat Asian carp, $566 million for construction projects at the FBI. As far as that goes, I mean, I agree that it's not that as if there's nothing that can be cut from this bill. And that's what happens when Congress passes a 5,600-page piece of legislation in a matter of hours. But that stuff, to my eye, Kim, looked like pretty small potatoes. I mean, the reason this is a $2.3 trillion bill is that it's funding for the government and then hundreds of billions of dollars of this COVID relief.
Yeah, and this is why it feels like a little bit too little too late. Look, I would have been entirely behind a President Trump who earlier in this year told Congress, warned Congress, that if they didn't send him individual spending bills, as they should be doing under our budgeting process and getting that regular work done, and that they, if they weren't going through and that and vowing that his Office of Management and Budget would be going line by line through the bills that they did send, on the alert for fat and pork and other special interest provisions, and threatening to veto anything that came to him that way, meaning if you had a President Donald Trump who'd said spending is one of my priorities, and that's probably something that should have happened 4 years ago. But that's not been the case. And so now you have an administration that, look, it's tried to do its best at times on spending, but overall it doesn't have a great track record. It wasn't one of its priorities. And so it now seems silly. Is he really going to, you know, veto the bill because of the check issue and the CARP issue or the Kennedy issue? You know, this is a bill that in a better world needs to be redone from beginning to end. And that's just not going to happen. And that gets to the weird timing of this. One of the problems here is that this COVID relief bill, which is what he's cranky about, is connected to the wider bill to fund the government on an ongoing basis. And that bill, or that funding, runs out on Monday night. So in theory, if he doesn't do anything with this, then the government shuts down for some period of time. Now, bear in mind, presidents don't have to sign bills. If they do nothing, they don't sign them or don't veto them, they go into effect 10 days later. So he could just do nothing in the end, but you'd still have some period of a government shutdown. And this also upends the fact, look, all of Congress passed this thing and jetted out of town. No one's here. That's why Nancy Pelosi is talking about unanimous consent, because that's a provision in which you just offer this and it would happen unless even one person said no. Congress is due back on Monday to deal with a completely separate bill, the defense authorization bill, but there could be some period of time where the government shuts down.
Yeah, and speaking of picking strange fights, adding to the Asian carp, I mean, another thing that Trump brought up in his video remarks was this deduction, this full deduction for business lunches that we talked about yesterday. Part of the bill extends that full deduction for 2 years. And President Trump is insisting, Bill, that that's not enough. And he said Congress can terminate it at a much later date, but 2 years is not acceptable. It's not enough, unquote. And again, I mean, that to me, I agree with Kim. These seem like strange fights to pick at the 11th hour.
Right. I mean, the reason we have this is have these things is at the 11th hour, people stuff all sorts of things in. It's not clear to me that President Trump would prevail in this fight either. So I'm wondering, you know, why he's doing it. Again, I share his view that with Kim, I think there's a lot of bad stuff in these bills and we should have fought them. But then when he wants more money in some areas and he waits till, you know, literally 2 days before Christmas, it doesn't give anyone much options. It looks a little more like posturing than anything real will come from this.
Hang tight. We'll be right back. You're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at alibabapowersbusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. So Bill was suggesting that this looks like some posturing from President Trump. And, you know, that's an interesting thought. His video message on Twitter about this spending bill, this COVID relief bill, had a little bit of a subtle veto threat. He didn't use that word, but he said that if Congress doesn't send him a suitable package, then maybe the next administration will have to take up COVID relief. But Kim, I mean, you raised the question earlier. Do you think that he would actually do that? Government funding is about to run out. And I mean, this package passed with pretty strong margins. In the Senate, the vote was 92-6. And the attitude among some of those lawmakers might be that we got this mess done once. And, you know, as reluctant as they maybe are to put their name on it again, just get it done and move on.
Yeah, we just don't know what he's going to do. Look, in the past, President Trump has issued veto threats and followed through on those vetoes. We had, you know, a government shutdown, and it had to do over his border wall funding. At other times, he has threatened to veto bills and then changed his mind and signed them. So nobody really knows what this means. It was, as you said, a very subtle suggestion that he would do this. There is or are some out there who think that this is in some ways, look, Donald Trump piling on a bill that is a pretty ugly looking bill, especially for conservative voters, many of who look at this, they're questioning the need for all this more spending. And, you know, there could be an element here. Some people are suggesting that this is a president who's a kind of angry right now at some members of Congress, particular senators, who he feels are not doing enough to fight for him in terms of the election results. He's reportedly unhappy that several of them have been referring to President-elect Biden. But here's an interesting twist, too, just to talk about Bill's weird morning to wake up to. Senator Lindsey Graham is now suggesting that maybe that this is a leveraging moment, that what the president is actually really upset about is Section 230 in that defense authorization bill. And Senator Graham suggested that if Republicans in Congress were willing to actually roll back Section 230, the president might be willing to sign both bills. So that's been injected into this as well, too.
Well, and that raises the issue of the other legislation that is hanging sort of in limbo, the National Defense Authorization Act, also passed in Congress with pretty strong margins. And that one, President Trump has explicitly threatened to veto. And what part of what he wants or has wanted is a repeal of Section 230, this law that shields internet companies from liability for users' posts. And he also objects to provisions in that bill that require the names of Confederate leaders to be taken off of U.S. military bases. I guess, Bill, we're just sort of waiting to see again whether Trump is actually going to veto this, but Congress is sort of scheduling and rounding up the votes to do an override already.
Right. I mean, I think one of the problems with this for the party is that if the president vetoes it, I mean, the only real pressure is on Republicans, right? The Democrats will pass it. Some of the Republicans will want to pass it, but they may pay a price because the president is berating them. Look, I think there's an easy answer on this. It's like the other bills, a big mammoth bill. And 230 has nothing to do with defense. And it deserves a full and open debate. There's obviously problems. You know, conservatives see a pronounced bias, which is real, on the big tech companies and platforms. I mean, we saw how Twitter suppressed the New York Post perfectly reasonable story on Hunter Biden. And the left, meanwhile, hates them just because they're big and successful. So I think something's coming. But I just, again, to do it the last minute and to tack on a defense bill, I think is a very bad way to do anything. We need a full debate on 230. an open debate in all its complexities. It's not as simple. It raises other questions if you get rid of 230. So we need to debate that, and Congress needs to take deliberate action, but not just as this, you know, afterthought pinned onto something larger.
Yeah, and it is interesting. I mean, this is how the Trump administration appears to be spending its final Christmas in office here. Is we may have a government shutdown. Not sure it's going to happen, but it might. And there's wrangling over attempts to get these non-related things like 230, Kim, into bills and veto threats and just one last taste of the Trumpian chaos, I guess. Before the normalcy, quote unquote, comes back in.
Yeah, well, by the way, just saying, I wouldn't bank too much on the normalcy that Joe Biden is promising. Washington has had a lot of problems before Donald Trump came in, and it will continue to have a lot of problems afterward. I was among those who remember writing about all of those cliffs. Remember, we were coming off of spending cliffs and the tax cliff and a lot of late nights writing about Congress getting things done at the last minute. But yes, this does make for a muddier than usual end of the year. And I would just point out on this, though, that I think you can talk about this and say Trump chaos, but this to me is blame equally shared. And again, why are we dealing with this 2 days before Christmas or 3 days before Christmas? Because Congress didn't pass a funding bill until 3 days before Christmas, putting the entire federal government, you know, ability to keep going on the back of that. And they did it in a really appalling way. So, you know, I know I understand why everyone just wants it to go through, but I can also understand a little bit of pushback from the White House, if nothing else, than on how it was done and the sausage that went into this ugly thing.
Oh, fair enough. Though I wonder, Bill, if you agree with that. I mean, I guess the slight pushback I would make is that you would think that a Republican president would have worked out his veto threat issues with the Republican Senate Majority Leader before they came to the end of the negotiation and passed the bill in the first place.
Yeah, they might. But, you know, with President Trump, I don't think we can count on the usual process he's having. We don't know also when he decided this and so forth. We also don't know if Mark Meadows has spoken to the Senate Majority Leader. I mean, that tends to be how presidents communicate or tell what they're thinking. They don't always have one-on-one meetings. It's the chief of staff that handles a lot of that. So we don't know. But I think what it's all doing, it's making for a very chaotic end of the year. And all presidents have this. Their official powers, you know, remain full until the last day, but their powers of influence, you know, start waning as people realize, well, in a few weeks, not many more weeks, you know, less than a month, it's going to be a new person in that office. So, you know, it's a very frustrating time for a president that's lost an election. I think it's probably a more difficult time for Donald Trump based on his reactions. But it's the reality that you start losing the power. People aren't as afraid of you as they were before. So, you know, I think we're seeing all this rolling up together and with the big honking pieces of legislation going down at the last minute, too.
Finally, on Tuesday, President Trump issued 15 pardons and 5 commutations with a few notable names on the list. One of them, Kim, being George Papadopoulos, this former Trump campaign advisor who pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI. And here's what the White House said in its statement. It said, Mr. Papadopoulos was charged with a process-related crime. One count of making false statements in connection with Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation, and went on to say that the Mueller found no evidence of collusion, and yet his team still charged Papadopoulos with this crime. Kim, what do you make of that that clemency?
Yeah, I was actually really happy to see it. And not just Papadopoulos, but also Alex Van der Zwaan, who was another figure that was caught up and also charged by Mueller's team with, quote, false statements. And he had been connected to Paul Manafort, and this supposedly had to do with things that he told investigators. But the bigger point here is that this gets to the issues of special counsels. One of the reasons I hate them so much, and the abuses in my mind that they perpetrate, is in that, you know, as that statement said, Bob Mueller never found the one thing he was charged with finding, which was supposedly collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russian government, because there never was any. And we know that this was a dirty political trick that set this up. And I'll tell you what, Bob Mueller should have understood all of that at the beginning, too. And yet he instead pursued this. He wanted to get scalps to hang on the wall, and he wrecked a lot of lives. And he went after, it's kind of the last bastion of scurrilous prosecutors, is when you try to get someone for lying, right? And so he went after, you know, Mike Flynn on this, Alex Van Der Zwan, George Papadopoulos. Now, the Flynn case became more messy, and in the end, also received a pardon, but it was only after Department of Justice had dropped charges. You know, the Papadopoulos and Van Der Zwan cases had kind of taken place and were all over with by the time Attorney General Bill Barr was taking a closer look at some of this stuff. So to me, this is kind of justice delayed, in that I don't think that these cases ever should have been brought, because they weren't pertinent or relevant to what Mueller was doing.
A couple other names on the list are members of Congress. Former New York Congressman Chris Collins, who pleaded guilty to conspiracy to commit securities fraud, as well as former California Congressman Duncan Hunter, who pleaded guilty to a campaign finance violation after being accused of using campaign funds essentially to pay for personal expenses. I mean, I guess I have not looked closely at the details of those individual prosecutions here. But Bill, it does seem like the president, justified or not, is going to take some hits here for being a Republican president, pardoning some Republican former members of Congress.
Yeah, that's true. It'd be nice if Democratic presidents would take the hit when they pardon someone like Mark Rich, for example, right before they leave. Then I'd feel a little more inclined to listen to the complaints. One of the things I think two of the things about pardons that really need to remain in the forefront is, one, it is probably, I think it is, unarguably, the most unlimited power in the Constitution granted a president. There's no restrictions on it there. So he can do it wherever he wants. And the second part is that pardons don't mean you're saying the person is innocent. And a lot of pardons don't go to innocent people. What they're saying is that there are circumstances, either that you've served enough time in prison for what you did. There are mitigating circumstances. You know, say the African-American woman that Trump pardoned, I think earlier this year or last year, had been given a life sentence for participating in a cocaine ring. But, you know, in prison, she was a mentor to a lot of other people. And I think the president thought that was, you know, life sentence was unduly harsh, that no purpose is served by keeping her in jail. And so a lot of people, it's a tempering power. Like, for example, whether or not Scooter Libby was guilty, I think there was an excellent case for pardoning him just because of the excesses of the federal prosecutor. You know, there was no underlying crime. As Kim says, these lying charges, in a way, they're an admission that you can't get the guy on anything substantive, right? So these are not necessarily meant for people who are innocent. They're meant to temper a system, to give the president some discretion where he thinks justice would be better served by one of these pardons. I mean, the president also pardoned a bunch of people from the private security firm Blackwater that was over, you know, overseas, and these guys were involved in these would look to be completely horrible killings, but they've been in, you know, they've been serving time and so forth. So, you know, I think we just have to take it. This is what presidents do, and they tend to do a lot of the more controversial ones at the end, because they don't have to pay there's a lot of blowback, but they're not going to pay the consequences for it.
Thank you, Kim and Bill. Thank you all for listening. WSJ Podcast is off Friday and off next week. So happy holidays, happy new year, and we'll see you right back here in 2021 for another edition of Potomac Watch.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at alibabapowersbusinesses.com.